Welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show, live from Agile DC. I'm Austin Chadwick, this is Chris Lucian, and today we're very excited to have Wellen Falco with us.
Hello.
Bright and early in the morning and ready to talk, yeah. So how you doing, Wellen? Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm an Agile technical coach, and I actually use mob programming as the way I coach teams. So every day that I'm on site with each team, I sit for 2 hours and we mob together, and that's how I change behavior, it's how I introduce techniques, it's how we learn to code better.
Fantastic. Yeah. So I guess that has nothing to do with our show.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to work out.
Might be a little bit directly related. So, Wellen, you have a lot. We talked about this a little bit earlier, but you have a lot of experience with first-time mobs, right?
I calculated like over 1,500 facilitations.
Yeah.
Not 1,500 brand new teams, but like with a brand new team, I will do 10 facilitations,
10.
Right?
Okay.
Like in a 2-week session.
Oh, okay.
So it's closer to like 200 brand new teams.
200 brand new teams, to up to 5 to 10 facilitations each, and facilitating the mob that has been together for the first time in many cases.
And getting people who have never mobbed to mob for their first time.
Okay, and so I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. What are maybe some patterns you've seen that could be helpful to audience members who are just getting together to mob for the first time, and maybe what would be your recommendations, and then what other interesting experiences have you had in that space?
Yeah, so I mean, I think a lot of times people are surprised when they come and they do their mob, because there's this phenomenon, you know, where you say something, but they hear, they're so expecting something that they hear that anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever had that thing where someone comes up and speaks to you like in English, but you're so expecting, like you're like you might be in France, you're so expecting it to be in French that even though it's like perfect fine English, like your brain is just like, I'm not getting it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the two big things that I see with people when they try mobbing on their own that is distinctly different than when I usually sit with them is what they do at the keyboard and when they rotate.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and these are related things actually, right? So the first thing is they have a lot of times the person at the keyboard is thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just a very unfortunate thing to do in mobbing. And if you're thinking, then you want to be able to like complete a thought.
Yeah.
So they start doing rotation times at like 30 minutes or 15 minutes, and that is horrible. Don't do that. So when I sit down, I'm like, okay, we're going to rotate every 2 to 3 minutes. They're like, what? And then when we say like no thinking at the keyboard, that's also like their idea is like the keyboard's going to be the scariest place, but the keyboard is the safest place.
Yeah,
like they will tell you what to do.
You have the least room for failure, right?
Least room for failure, least room for creativity. Like, mm-hmm. it's very, almost meditative, right? Like, it's just, do the thing they say, boom. And so, like, those two things are the most different. The other thing is, mob programming, this actually comes from William Larson, I think, has already been on.
Yeah, yes.
He said, like, sort of get, like, in the stages of learning, environment is one of the really important things.
Absolutely.
And of course, at Hunter, I mean, you went through a series of creating and modifying your environment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And with most of the teams that I've seen that have adopted mob programming full time, they also do.
Mm.
Right? And there's different forms of that, but I mean, one form is there are a significant amount of teams that have written their own timer.
Mm-hmm.
And how many timers have you written?
How many times? I've written 2 at least that I've published.
So, yeah, this is an interesting aspect of it, but there's also just physical space.
Yeah.
Right? There's like, how do you set up your table? Do you have a table? How do you set up your monitors? How many monitors? How big are the monitors? Are they projectors? And the first time, you don't get to craft that the way that like like a real mobbing functioning team is. Mm-hmm. But almost always when I sit down in a room and we're going to do some mobbing, step one is I'm rearranging the room.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you did that yesterday in the conference.
Yesterday we got up early and we went to mob, and there were people sitting around, and like the layout sucked, and they all knew it sucked.
Yeah.
But I don't think they felt like it's my job to fix this. Mm-hmm. They felt like, oh, well, this is the way the room is.
Yeah.
Right. And so, yeah. So fix the layout. And with the layout, like for example, right here, we have this table in front. It's really nice. It's tired. I can kind of rest on it.
Yeah.
That's a horrible thing in a mob.
Yeah.
Right? Like this is where I pull out my phone or I pull out my laptop or, even if I'm stuck, so sometimes conference, it's very interesting the way that companies do their conference rooms. That's a whole show on that one, but they sometimes like to bolt the tables down.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like people are going to steal the conference table.
Yeah.
And so in those situations, you usually do get people pulling out laptops and stuff. And in those situations, I usually turn the timer down closer to 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Like 2 minutes. Oh, I got to drag. Oh, I got to drag. And by the third time, like 6 months later, they're just leaving the computer. Like, okay, this is now a burden.
Yeah.
Right. and so there are things you can do systemically that you don't have to yell at the people to do the behavior you want. You can just make it. That's the thing, like what he was saying, make it as easy as possible to be the best you can be.
Yeah.
Like another version of that I've heard is the pit of success.
Yeah.
Where he's like, oh, I succeeded.
Yeah. Fall into the pit of success.
And so one of them is like, if I'm talking to you, I'm going to talk in a voice that naturally talks to you. And if I talk to you, I'm going to talk in a voice that naturally talks to you. And so putting the driver and navigator right next to each other is disastrous. Because
I like that. Yeah.
They want, and in other cultures, it's actually considered rude. Yeah. Like, if I'm screaming at you, like that's just rude.
Yeah.
And so, you need to put them so that if they hear, if the driver can talk to the navigator, then the rest of the mob can hear what's going on.
I like that. That's good.
It's just a really simple hack, but just move them over there.
Yeah.
Don't put a table in front of them, and you won't have to worry about them grabbing things.
Yeah.
All right. Rotate them quickly, and you'll make sure that the entire thing is paying attention, but you'll also make sure that no one's too scared.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like, yesterday morning, Bonnie was the first time that they were mobbing, and they were like, you know, there's only 3 minutes, so I could get through.
Yeah.
And then another thing, like we did an experiment out in Boston because we were talking about for the mob programming conference, which always happens like late winter in Boston. And we wanted to do a session on is mobbing faster better?
Mm-hmm.
And so basically I just structured the session. I'm like, okay, we're going to start at 15 minutes on a rotation, then we're going to do 10 minutes on a rotation, then we're going to do 7 minutes on a rotation, then we're going to do 5 minutes on
it. Nice.
And this session actually came at the end of the conference, so everyone had already been doing lots of, and the 15 minutes was painful.
Oh, yeah, God.
It was so painful.
Yes.
And then like, you know, it got better and better. And when it got down to 1 minute, it feels just ridiculous. The thing that I noticed, and I actually paused, I'm like, did you just hear that? And they're like, yeah, people are laughing. Right? Yeah. Because there's just, you couldn't complete a thought.
Yeah.
A minute, it's gone.
Yeah.
And so the person coming up after you had to continue on. And that's exactly what we want in mobbing, right?
Yeah.
We want the group. Like, it's our idea. It's not one person's idea. And so you can play with shortening this time. Mm-hmm. Another consideration with the time is how long will it take you to get back?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, and I think I learned this from James Shore, where when he was doing training, they realized that the number of iterations was way more important than the total time.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have an hour and I can do 20 iterations, that is significantly better than if I had 20, or around the same as if I had 20 hours, I did an hour iteration each time.
Yeah.
Right. It was just literally getting through the rotations that mattered.
Yeah.
And so I really care about how long is it going to be before you're at the computer again. And that's an easy calculation. What is your rotation time and how many people do you have?
Yeah.
So when I'm like at the code retreats, and if you've never been to a code retreat, highly recommended. Global Day is in the fall, usually in November. So there'll be one near you in November, but they happen sporadically.
We can
throughout.
Put links in the description.
But a lot of times, if I'm at a code retreat, at some point I will facilitate a mob there. One time in Zurich, we did like literally a day where all I did was facilitate mobs for the coding place.
Yeah.
But if I have 20 people and I have a 40-minute session, well, then it's got to be a 2-minute mob. Mm-hmm. Right, because mm-hmm. 20 times 2 is 40, and otherwise everyone doesn't even get a chance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. So more people means smaller times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, less people. If I have 4 people, then I can like scale way back to like 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is I like 4 minutes as a starting time for like 4 to 6 people.
Mm-hmm.
For more than 6 people, I'm usually starting at 3 minutes. And then I'll sometimes, like, I will get finicky. Like, I'll get to, like, 2.5 minutes. Like, I start playing with the 30 seconds because it kind of matters.
Nice.
I also usually start with my phone.
Mm. As a timer.
As the timer.
Yeah, as the timer.
Yeah. And interesting. Why? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good question. Why? I think the answer is you really want it to be as easy to reproduce as possible. And everyone understands their phone timer.
Yeah, I like that.
And so I do the phone timer. I make them physically stand up and rotate. That's another thing. Oh, and they suck at it. So, like, do you mind if we rotate?
If we rotate, if we get up and rotate?
Yeah.
So,
am I not doing good? Well,
no,
you're doing okay. So that. I mean, we are sitting with 3 very experienced mob people.
Yeah.
That is a good rotation. You will experience this when you fly back to San Diego. The way it usually happens is this. Can you stand up? Good. And then go over to Austin. Okay, so now the seat's empty, so I'll go. And now, can you go?
Yeah.
And that's how a lot of people rotate. They wait until the person next to them. And if you have 20 people, like, we've just now spent 5 minutes rotating. And so this is a trick I learned from Woody. When I see this, we're going to stop mobbing for a second, and we're going to practice rotating.
Nice.
So I'll be like, rotate.
Nice. It's like elementary
rotate
school.
Rotate again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And usually by like the 6th time, they're starting to be like, okay, yeah,
it's
we got it.
It's
like,
rotation
this should
product,
be.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. And it,
you know, that's funny because at the conferences usually, I mean, I think I even saw stuff like this yesterday where it was like a lot of like just jumbling around and stuff like that. So that, I've seen that pattern before, but I never thought to optimize it. So that's a really cool thought.
And the easy way to optimize it, just make them do it 5 or 6 times in a row and they will get it.
Yeah, yeah. And you can do more with your time for the rest of the time. So yeah, it's very insightful.
Yeah.
So this might be going off topic a little bit, but you and I were having a kind of hallway track conversation about this, and then I saw it in Joe and Michael's Harvesting Mob Programming Patterns track where a facilitator usually arises in a mob, right? And so how essential is that for that to happen, and
so
what are your recommendations on that?
We did not put this together when... So just as a little context... Mob programming arose from strong style pairing and coding dojos, which Woody and I started to do when I came back from the Agile 2009 conference.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not realize the potential this had when you bring it to work. It didn't even occur to us.
Yeah.
We thought, hey, this is excellent for training. These are fun for learning.
Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, it should have been obvious that the way you optimize work in a learning
environment
is to optimize learning.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But it was not obvious to us at all, and it was absolutely surprising to me when, like, in the very early days, when Woody was like, "Hey, we've been doing that every day."
Oh yeah.
Like, before we had the word, right? Like, there's like, I'm like,
I think
it's working for production. Like, what is this sorcery?
Well, what's funny is I think that you were probably the first person to give us feedback that we should name mock programming, right?
In the first place, this is something special. It needs a name.
Yeah, which was a pretty interesting thing because we had totally new dynamics. We were kind of like coming to the rescue of an emergency, and so we were banding together and learning as fast as we could. And so it's a really great story. And then you had happened to be there one day, and just it's like, this should have a name.
And at the time, I was using this technique for training, I was also living down in SoCal with you, and been friends with Woody forever, and so. When it was coming out, it was just like every day. I was like, "What is happening? Like, this is just." It was so weird to see this emerge, and so wonderful to see this emerge.
Absolutely.
And so, we didn't have the patterns back then. Like everything was just, "Well, this is what Hunter's doing."
Yeah.
Right. And it didn't even occur. Even like so when. So I think you actually recorded the time lapse. So a lot of people
that was Aaron. Aaron brought in this. That time lapse video.
Aaron Griffiths.
So he recorded the time lapse, and then me and so then I blurred out the anonymous person who did not want to be on YouTube, and then we annotated it with Woody actually up in San Francisco at the QCon conference. We were sitting in the
fantastic.
Thing. And.
It's about 7 years ago.
It's about 7 years ago now.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow.
It's going on eight. Yeah.
and so we didn't realize, like, we knew the driver pattern, we knew the navigator. I think we actually have an annotation where it's like Woody is like manager, not doing real work.
Yeah.
It was many years later than that I realized Woody was your facilitator.
Yeah.
And absolutely. you had a dedicated full time and gifted.
Yeah.
Like Woody is really good with people and like full-time facilitator that was watching over. And like, I remember when I would sit with you very often, Woody would sort of say stuff like, seems like you guys are in the weeds, right? Like, like it would just Woody speak for like start doing shit.
Yeah.
Sorry, YouTube. Like that preference of action is another thing that I see in first-time mobs that's bad. Like, so often they just end up talking about things. So there's two things that are really helpful for that. A lot of times in mobs, the first time, if you're not doing it around real work, right? And if you can't do it around real work, it's a very good thing to do. But a lot of times it's intimidating for people.
Yeah.
So they'll start with an exercise or a kata. And very often it'll be test driven development. Because test driven development is an excellent way of having intentions set out loud. And so you'll go to the whiteboard and you'll draw some picture-y thing of, we want to build this thing, maze, tic-tac-toe. And then you'll go. And you'll write comments in the code and say, like, well, we made a board, and we put an X here, and an O here, and an X here, and an O here, and an X here, and then we won the game. And then, like, that English might last for, like, up to, like, 2 hours as each time you're chipping away this line.
Yeah.
But we know exactly where we're going to go. And you can sort of say, well, does the code exist? And if the code exists, does it compile? And if it doesn't compile, what do we need to create to make it compile? And if it compiles, does it run? And if it runs, does it work?
Yeah.
And, like, as you keep going down that ladder, but that intention from the very first minute of drawing on the board is guiding us. And so TDD is very useful in that. And when people are stuck, very often I will say, is it like, well, like, you just ask that question, like, does it work? And when the answer is no, why doesn't it work? And okay, well, why doesn't that? Then they know what to do. And you don't actually tell them, you just sort of have to question them.
Yeah.
If it does work, does it stink?
Yeah.
Like, is that code good? And if it's good, well, then let's move on. Let's do something new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I've been finding, and this is actually stuff that came out when Arlo was our visiting coach, is we started doing a similar thing for regular work. So it's with a team that's doing LabVIEW. It's like a way of setting up electronics and code.
Yeah. Okay.
And I don't know how to do this thing.
Yeah.
That's an interesting part. Like a lot of times I think people think facilitators need to be technically adept.
Yeah.
But actually you don't need any technical skill. Mm. If you are watching this and you're like, oh, I'm a coach, but I don't really do code, like that's not a problem. Mm-hmm. They don't need your coding skills, the programmers. They need your facilitation skills, things that you are good at, things like getting them to talk to each other, things like listening to each other. Mm-hmm. That is a skill. It took me a long time to like get. It's something I still struggle with. They need somebody who literally holds the clock and tells them to rotate.
Yeah.
Right. Who, when the driver starts thinking, says no thinking at the keyboard.
Yeah. Like he did to me yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah. or like, so let's say you're on a team, and I see this a lot where there's the quiet person, mm-hmm. and they often will say exactly the right thing, mm-hmm. and nobody will hear them.
Oh yeah.
And like as a facilitator, your job is to say, hey, can you say that again? That sounded important. Mm-hmm. Right? Like and sort of amplify, but not take away their voice.
Yeah.
Right.
And these are things that, you know, facilitators and coaches are actually usually quite good at.
Yeah.
But they don't.
Code's intimidating.
Well, and programmers are they're paying attention to the code. They're not paying attention to the dynamics of the way people are interacting. Mm-hmm. Another thing that we do is a retro mm-hmm. at the end of every new mob. Mm-hmm. And so like 2 hours of programming, retrospective.
Yeah.
You were doing, I think, at the end of every day, is that?
We have some mobs that do every 45 minutes.
Oh, like,
and,
nice.
And then...
it's
and
in
so
the timer.
It's like, yeah, it's in the timer, they go through a couple of rotations, and then sometimes they're abbreviated, sometimes they have like cards. To, like it's... no mob in our group is told what to do, and so there's very divergent practices across all of them, and then every once in a while we get together to have like a mob share of like positive things that are going on in your mob and go around. So one experiment going on is like the relentless feedback, or what was it called? The
radical candor.
Radical candor is like constantly giving each other feedback, things like that. So there are a lot of experiments happening in the group. But yeah, so the minimum requirement is once a week, but most...
Oh, once a week seems super long. That's a 30-minute rotation to me.
so that's what we agreed, like, the department requirement was. And then from there, most teams have it shorter.
Nice. Yeah. So the way we do a retro is usually one of two forms mm-hmm. for us. Usually sticky notes, like just write what you observe and put it up, and then we just sort of cluster the similar things. Another thing that we do often is it's also an observation retro, mm-hmm. but with a mind map.
Oh, we did this yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And usually I'll seed it with those things, right? So things that you probably are thinking of obvious, but like, what did you notice in the code, right? Like, I didn't realize they had this language, or tooling, what did they have in the tooling, or what happened in domain? I didn't realize that we had this machine down in warehouse 4. Or, you know, what happened with, like, the group dynamics.
Mm. Emotions.
Emotions was the one that usually is surprising to people.
Yeah.
Because I think most people understand that emotions are not things that you bring to work. But what we have found that you have to do two things with the emotion. You have to say what the emotion was. Mm-hmm. And then you have to include the event right before it that triggered that emotion.
Nice. I like it.
Just notice there's a very big difference between the emotion was I was bored, mm-hmm. right? Like that feels really negative. Mm-hmm. But okay, well, why were you bored? Well, when we were trying to deploy, and it took like we just kept having to do all those little things, and it took us like 15 minutes. And it's like, what value are we getting out of it?
Yeah.
Well, then boredom is telling you this process. Yes. There's something you need to fix in this process.
Yes.
It's no longer a negative.
Yeah.
It's your really powerful subconscious pattern matching and trying to talk to you, and it doesn't have a voice other than emotions. Mm. So, you know, it's not just happy or like if you're happy, tell me why.
Yeah.
Right. And if you're joyful, right, which very often happens in a mob.
Yeah.
It's usually your brain saying, "Hey, this is not just good,
yeah.
but surprising."
surprising.
I didn't expect this to be good. Pay attention so we can do it again.
Yeah.
And so, nice. Yeah, and this comes from, I don't know if I mispronounce her name, but it's like Clara McKellen. If you Google language of emotions, her name will complete.
All right.
But yeah, like a lot of times the emotion in the event is super useful.
Mm.
And this entire cycle of really small rotations, everyone engaged, understanding, like getting a chance to digest what just happened, it's super powerful.
Nice. I love it. In the interest of time, I wanted to cover one more topic.
I don't think you're understanding the interest of time.
Yeah. and so that was all really good stuff, and I think we could do more episodes, and I want to do more episodes with you.
Absolutely.
And so I think the one thing that I'd be remiss to not cover is the ROI of mobbing, because think that being a coach that has facilitated many new mobs, you probably have also talked to many executives or leaders and talking about the ROI of mobbing. And so, and I've seen an infographic that you had with like levels Lines. And things like that. And so,
Let's start with just straight out the ROI.
Sure.
Because we see different metrics of this multiple times. I think yesterday we had a conversation. And everyone gets, I mean, what we do and like our measures of value are so, they're horrible. They're not scientific, but one consistent pattern that I see, and in fact, I think I tweeted out, because you had that list of resources.
Yes.
Right, which is it's somehow Kanbani board.
It's a Trello board, software professional resources.
And on there, it was interesting. There was a talk, and it had a version of my graphic, which is, I think, why I was like, oh, I should watch that.
Yeah, I took it from your Twitter. Yeah. It's a link to your Twitter,
No, that one's not. No, it was a talk someone else gave. He made his own version of my graphic. And it was the screenshot, or the thumbnail. So I was like, I haven't seen that, and so I didn't know the guy, and so I checked it out. And he gave this talk, and he talked about mobbing. They were full-time mobbing. And there is like 30 seconds in the talk where he says, and actually looked at the timer because it was in my head. There's this part where he's like, so we measure how many stories we get through.
Yeah.
And our team was going through like, I forget the numbers, but it was like 5-6 stories a month. And when we started mobbing, we went through 12 times as much. Right. And that's sort of it. And then he just kind of moves on. I was like, that deserves a lot more time. Would you like to add 12 times capacity to your team? That's more than 30 seconds of an hour long talk.
Real quick, that's Tommy, I don't remember his last name, but the tips and tricks of mob programming at a DevOps.
Yeah, at a DevOps out in Europe.
And we should link the Trello board.
I'll link it.
And you have access to edit the Trello board too. I don't know if you know that.
I did not know that. Yes, I have links.
You should put them there because it's a collaborative resource, and people that send me links on a regular basis, I add them to that. And so like Austin, myself, Jason Kearney, Lowell Falco, number of other people, and so it's kind of an invite only for edits, but the board itself is public.
So the first year, like the year before, you released like a product to production, and the year after you released like 20 products to production. I remember back at the open space in Irvine, we were having a conversation and people were asking, and one of the things that was really wonderful is, you started that practice of sending your entire team to a conference, and that was I hadn't seen that before, and it was really neat to have. Mm-hmm. And people were asking questions, and one of the people were like, "You only work at one thing at a time," and you're like, "Yeah, and that's the rule, like that's important to us."
Yeah.
And they're like, "But this is impossible because we have multiple things we have to support." And they're like, "Well, we support multiple things too."
Yeah.
And I remember at one point I'm like, how many different, completely different projects can you deploy a day? And you're like, well, 2 to 4.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh. And you're like, yeah, but one thing at a time.
Yeah.
And like, people are like, oh. Like, you're deploying to 4 completely different projects, new features every day? I'm okay with that being one at a time.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, because they're used to like one at a time means like one per quarter or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like and so that just very rapid and huge ability to like just open that pipe of productivity.
Mm.
I've seen that. So like I mentioned, the way that I do technical coaching is I use Mavi. Now, to be fair, I don't use the word till later.
Yeah.
It's not very productive.
Mm-hmm.
I am at a conference, we're gonna do a mob session, I use the word, that's what people understand. It's it lets them know to come.
Yeah.
And the people who show up want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's called self-selection. But your team, that's not gonna be the way it is. So what I will usually do, and I come because I have privilege, right? Because I'm an external coach, like they're doing things different because I'm there.
Yeah.
I'll sit with the team for 2 hours each day, and I'll just sort of say, you know, we are going to work on your real work, but we're not working on it to be productive. We're working on it to learn. So we're going to work in this weird style, and then I describe it, but sure. I just don't give it a name. And,
yeah.
And in fact, when I had Woody out as my first visiting coach, I did a thing where I brought different coaches from around the world, and they came for 2 weeks, and we got to pair her, and it was fantastic.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And Woody was my first one. And when he came out, because another thing I do is when I'm on site, we do an hour of learning every day. So learning hour, which actually I got from you.
Yeah, we still do that.
Yeah. And that's just an amazingly good practice. And so he did one on mob programming.
Mm-hmm.
And these teams that I have been mob programming with for over 6 months were like, oh, on really basic insights.
Yeah.
And I was looking around and I was like, I mean, because I was worried that everyone was going to be bored.
Yeah.
And I was like, we know this. We've been doing it. But no, they've been doing it. And even though we've been retroing, most of the stuff that was showing up in the retros was about the work and not about the meta of how we were working.
Yeah.
Right. And as a facilitator, you know, it's not really my job to make the observations.
Yeah.
So it's my job to like sort of support what they are doing, draw out from them as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
But so there was just a lot of, and I didn't realize that these people weren't sitting and just reflecting on the meta, but it's not something a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Right? Like I said, it took us a while to realize Woody was your facilitator for 4 years.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So we do that, but when I leave, most of the teams don't continue mobbing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Most of the teams go back to the way they work, and they do what I would call spontaneous mobbing.
Yeah.
Like they have a station set up. Once they have a station set up, they will, you know, 3-4 times a week gather together to work on something that they sort of they realize they need more than just themselves to do.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, one of the wins of mobbing is something that is super hard can become, you know, easy and doable.
Yeah.
But there are many more wins to that. And mm-hmm. one of the great ones is something that is stupid easy disappears.
Yes.
Yes.
Right? Like, and...
That's a big reason why we mob all the time.
Yeah.
Because we need to suffer through the pain together because we want to be incentivized to automate it.
Shared pain is a huge, important thing.
Absolutely.
Because your pain, I don't give a damn about. But my pain, that's got to get fixed.
That's a big part of the boilerplate. I think if we weren't mobbing, you know, during that second year of mobbing and releasing the 20 projects, a good 4 or 5 of those were created by a generator that wrote all the code based off of a database schema. And so we realized that very quickly that we were writing the same app. And traditionally, 4 people would have received 4 different applications to write. And so in the course of a few weeks, we knocked out all of this work that would have taken probably years to actually get completed. And it was just a number of weeks that it was done after writing a generator together.
Have you had Lynn on?
Yes.
So I don't know if she talked about her first story. Okay. Right, so if you've already seen this, like, but the very first time that she mobbed at Hunter, she was there to do some reporting apps, and she had gathered all her data, and she was ready to do it. And I remember talking to her in the morning and saying, you should go and mob with the group. And she was hesitant.
Yeah.
Right. And I was like, you know Woody. Woody's wonderful. Like, yeah. Just go do it. And, you know, most of the time when I try to convince people to do stuff, it doesn't work. So I could tell she wasn't going to do it. Yeah. And I was training. And so, like, I trained. And I call at lunch to ask because I knew she wasn't going to do it. And I'm like, so, did your mom? Because I know she's going to be like, no. But then I can, like, edge her and be like, well, maybe. Hey, we still got time today. You should do it. So I'm like, hey, have your mom? And she's like, it's done and it's in production. They're watching the warehouse data on their phone right now. And I was like, okay. And like, that was the last time I needed to commit. It's so much quicker. Yeah. And how did you go from zero to on the iPhone in a morning? Well, the answer was you had automated so much. How do we set up a new project? Boom. We have a template.
Totally, yeah.
Like, how do we, and so, you spent the time writing that one feature, not doing all the extra work so that you could write that one feature.
Yeah.
When people talk about the ROI, very often what I see in companies, if you're watching, maybe this applies to you, is there's like five different places where you have very similar logic implemented in either very similar or very different ways.
Yeah.
That's not a great way to write code. It's not a very efficient way to write code. It shouldn't be like, hey, new opportunity to write the same logic. Let's do an entire new dinner. Like, the whole idea of software is, oh, we've already done this. We don't have to do it again. But that doesn't normally happen. And doesn't normally happen for two reasons. One, sometimes you don't know that it was in this other place. Mm-hmm. But the mob always knows. Because somebody's going to say something like, hey, didn't we do that in the reporting?
Yeah.
And usually, someone else will say, no, it wasn't in reporting, it was over in accounting.
Yep.
And now we're like, we're cooking with gas.
Yeah.
And so what happens is, to write that first feature, it usually is, it's faster, but it's in similar time. You have multiple people, so the person hours are sort of washing out. To write that second feature, it takes similar time, but instead of having two versions, you have a single method that you can call.
Okay.
And that third time, it's not like 10 times faster, right?
Yeah.
It's something that took you half a day is 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, so it's thousands of times faster.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those things I think people don't get about ROI in general, which is, it's not linear. It's not you do a day and, oh, it's 10 times better.
Yeah.
It's you do a day and it's and then, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Right? And
that's very much what we saw.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
And so, because I'm going to companies, I work three teams a day. So your company has to at least have three teams.
Yeah.
But most of the companies have 20, 30 teams.
Mm-hmm.
And for reasons I don't quite understand, one of those teams often will start doing mobbing full time, where the other ones don't.
Yeah.
If I understood the reasons, all of them would.
Yeah.
But one team will sort of start doing it. And then that team will do that order of magnitude of just sprinting ahead.
Yeah.
And one team went from not writing tests to doing TDD. Oh, and they were SQL people,
yeah.
Right? So this is how they did their ETL transformations, was test-driven development in SQL.
Nice.
And most people think that's not even a thing that is possible.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And so that progression, it's just huge. The interesting thing is that team afterwards is not given credit for the mobbing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In fact, I had this situation not with mobbing, but so I do teaching kids programming, and my very first student was this kid, Ezra, down in San Diego, which I started teaching him because I got into an argument about, can you teach with test-driven? And somehow out of that argument, I ended up signing up to teach.
I didn't know that.
That's and so what happened is, it was actually super fun because Ezra was great and he was 10, so he's kind of an idiot, and so we would write a test together, and I'd actually write the test, and then he would implement it and get it to pass. But He's 10.
Yeah.
And so I would say, that's excellent. And then I would exploit whatever idiot thing he did and write the next test.
Yeah.
Now solve this. Yeah. And he would solve that, but stupid, because he's still 10. And I would say, that's excellent. And like, you never ever had to correct him.
Yeah.
He just gave him these small little things that exploited whatever he did wrong. And then over the course of time, like, he just got so much better.
Yeah.
And at one point, his mother was not like a full-time programmer, but worked with programmers, understood programming.
Yeah.
And at one point, she wasn't understanding what Ezra was doing. And so she got upset, and she came in, and they're like, Ezra isn't learning anything.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I feel like he's learning stuff. And they're like, well, no, like, tell me something he's learning. I'm like, well, he's understanding hash maps pretty well. And he's like, he doesn't know what a hash map is. And I'm like, well, you know, he doesn't understand the words very well, but he can do the, like, if you give him this problem, he will tell you what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, he can't do that. And so they took it home, and he can do that.
Yeah.
And so I am thinking, I've won the argument.
Yeah.
Ezra's kicking butt. Like, obviously, you can teach kids
test-driven
development. That is not what happened.
All right.
What happened is, you can't teach kids test-driven development, but Ezra's really smart.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, Ezra is a sharp kid. He's only an idiot because he was 10. Right? Like, but the same thing happens in my companies.
Yeah.
Where they're like, oh, that team is really brilliant.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, they were really brilliant before they started mobbing. Like, maybe that's the difference. But that is not how that's not how you rationalize.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So I think we should take that we can put some end points on it, but I think that's a really good point. It's just, you know, if you're gonna talk about a team's performance over time, don't just, you know, compare them to where they were before.
That's an excellent way to do it.
Right? Yeah. And even, I always give people this suggestion, even if they're just like, oh man, this person's so smart, I'm never going to be like them. I'm like, don't ever compare yourself to somebody else. Always compare yourself to where you were before.
Yeah.
And evaluating teams, I think, is probably the same thing.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, take the work that they were able to produce before, compare it to after they started mobbing, and then figure that out. But, you know, use experiments, right? Like, have a hypothesis, one change, that sort of thing. And I think we're running up on time.
Yeah.
So
yes.
We probably want to close this out. This has been an awesome episode. And we'll definitely try and find some time to do some more.
Yeah.
So any closing thoughts from the table?
I mean, for me, there are so many productivity advantages to mobbing. There's so many learning things to mobbing, but one of the things that is, I think, even more important than all of that is it's so much more fun.
Right? Yes. Like, yes. Quality of life goes up.
So much. Exactly. Like, yeah. I love programming. And in a mob, I always love programming.
Yeah.
And if you are not enjoying your work, hey, you'll get all these awesome benefits and...
You start to enjoy yourself more.
Yeah.
I like that.
Big time.
All right.
Well, we'll call that a wrap for today, but thanks so much for being on the show. It's always a pleasure and always a joy discussing with you. And like and subscribe on YouTube. And until next time,
yes.
Have a good one.
Bye.